אתם עם SBS בעברית. לעוד סיפורים מעניינים, כנסו ל-sbs.com.au.
With mental health being such a hot button topic, we've decided to speak to a counseling psychologist to get his views on therapy. We'd also like to inform you that this information expressed in the interview is of general nature and that this information may not be appropriate for your personal circumstances. Contact your doctor for clear advice on your situation.
הפכו את אתר sbs.com.au/hebrew.
Robert Takash, welcome to SBS Hebrew.
Hi Muriel, nice to talk to you.
I note that your formal title is counseling psychologist. Can you tell us, please, what the difference is between being a counselor and being a psychologist is?
That's a very good question. In terms of what we do, it's probably very little. The difference is mostly in terms of the training required. There's legislation in relation to psychologists, so we need to be registered. We have associations that we need to belong, and we belong to an organization called APRA, which has a registry, and we have to submit all sorts of documentation, ongoing training, and so forth. Whereas my understanding is counseling is far more generic, and therefore any level of training in theory can present itself as counseling. So psychological counseling is within the auspices of legislation and accreditation, whereas counseling is far more voluntary.
So why did you want to do both when they're so similar to each other?
Oh, I see. No. Counseling psychology is a subcategory, a specialization within psychology. So you have educational psychology, which I used to belong to. Counseling psychology is another area, just like organizational psychology is a college within the discipline, and so is clinical psychology. And they're all very similar, but also different. So, for example, counseling psychologists are more likely to be working in the community, working with individuals, couples. So I'm trained as a family therapist. And my background, for example, is in child psychology. So I was trained as a child psychologist originally, and then I moved to adults, and I moved into family and couples and that kind of stuff, which is within the world of counseling psychology.
What's your favorite part of the job?
It's change of the times. Like, I used to do a lot of training, and I used to train professionals on how to work with children and how to work with children's families. Now that I'm getting older, I prefer to work more with adults and enjoy working with couples as well. But that would be, I guess, the areas of work that I enjoy. I enjoy the connection and interaction with adults, I guess, of different ages.
In terms of couples therapy, I think a lot of people are fascinated by this form of therapy. Do you find that couples come to you when they're on their last legs together, or do you find that people come to you as a form of connection and maintenance?
Very interesting. I'll answer it in a roundabout sort of way. I enjoy working with men, and a lot of men used to come to therapy because they would be told to go to see a therapist, but not by their own volition. Somewhere along the line, you would realize that, in a way, what they're talking to you about is about their partners and their relationship with their partners. So somewhere along the line, you would decide, well, it's better to have both of them here, given that all we're doing is one-person couple therapy. In other words, people come And what you discuss is the relationship with someone who's not here. So very often it's the conclusion is let's bring the other person in and all three of us will talk about what's going on and where to go in their relationship, how to improve it or, you know, how to let go of the relationship if that's where they want to go.
Mm. And how do you manage or how do you measure progress in therapy just generally? Is the end game that the patient no longer needs any more sessions, just like an open shut case?
They're all interesting questions. I mean, I think the person who knows best when it's time to end is the client, the individual who's seeking help. In other words, therapists have their own take on when therapy should finish. But who are we to determine when to finish and when not? And sometimes we're invested. We like the individual we're working with. And we can see that they could benefit from continuing. But there's an issue of motivation. There's an issue of expense. And there's an issue of what brought you to therapy in the first place. So sometimes you've resolved one of your issues and that's enough for you at this stage. Often people come to therapy in stages. They will come for a period of time and then leave, then return to it a few years later when other issues come up or the same issues return and they want to go a little bit further than they went the first time. So often the determinant factor is the client.
And what are some of these issues? When you mention issues, what are some of the themes that people come speak to you about?
Probably the main determinant or common factor is relationships.
Really?
I think people come, you know, when people are depressed or people are anxious, underneath there's lots of, there's early relationships with parental figures, there's relationships with partners, there's, I think a lot, we're social beings and all of us seek intimacy. Of course, people come sometimes because of anxiety, because of depression, because of mental health issues, but invariably, you end up talking and thinking in terms of relationships and connections and attachments and how to improve all those. And if you do, generally, some of the mental health issues will improve as well.
Mm. Speaking of mental health, it's not too long ago that the people in the state of Victoria endured some of the longest lockdowns in the world because of COVID. And I'm so sorry to bring up COVID because I know it's such a dreaded word. But Melbourne is where you're based. Did you sense a surge in people wanting to see you more during that time? And has it let up in the years since?
I certainly was busy during COVID. There was interesting differences. I think for some people, the idea that they could work from home and, you know, live within a very narrow world actually was enjoyable and desirable. It slowed down the pace of their lives. For young people, for school-age kids, I think it was often quite disastrous. I think being stuck at home and learning at home and not socializing was really quite a damaging thing for a lot of young people. And I think it affected a lot of families with young children or adolescents struggled during this period quite badly. And there's a lot of, you know, it's a little bit like dropping a pebble into a pond there. Ripples are still affecting the community, I think.
A lot of children are getting diagnosed now with ADHD. Is that a result of having better diagnosis tools or is it something environmental?
I think there's several ideas about ADHD. ADHD is a diagnosis that didn't exist or was very, very minor 50 years ago. It's a new diagnosis. And it's had various names and various designations over time, mostly related to the brain, you know, minimal brain dysfunction and different names that actually were connected to some kind of neurological damage that could never be found. Attention deficit disorder, it's far more of a functional thing. So it's how you perform, how you function within the expectations of school, home, and society. So it's a very social diagnosis. And it's relative to the expectations of the society. So there is better tools to diagnose it at the moment. They've improved over time. So there's more sensitivity. Also, there's higher expectations of the proportion of people how much you need to be able to concentrate and attend and what's defined as being outside of the boundaries of the normal. It's sort of complicated, and it leads to situations where different communities will have different rates of diagnosis. So, what? For example, 10 years ago, I don't know the statistics now, but a decade ago, Western Australia had far higher proportions of diagnosis of ADHD than Victoria or New South Wales. Those things might have changed, but that was certainly the case a few years ago.
Wow.
So it's all about what a community is prepared to live with in terms of diversity of behavior, rather than a real defined illness.
And obviously it's such a sliding scale as well.
Yeah.
In the severity.
Well, that's right. We're all in the continuum. So some of us are more restless and temperamentally more active than others. Some of us need more stimulation in order to be able to concentrate than other people. And society decides where the boundaries are and what's normal and what becomes abnormal.
Now, I know you're not a psychiatrist, but still you have a better view on this subject than most. What are your views on using psychedelics as a form of therapy?
It's not an area of expertise of mine, so I don't really know. I know that there's very interesting and exciting research coming out in terms of the use of stimulants and various drugs in the processing of trauma and post-traumatic stress disorder, but various types of traumas. And my understanding, and from what I've read, it's very effective in some cases, but it's still something that is in its early and formative stages, and it needs to be done within the right context and by people. You know, it's quite demanding in terms of professional involvement and intensity of that therapeutic work. The jury's out, but it's a very exciting area that is developing at the moment, and you want to see the data and you want to see if it's going to continue going in the direction that it is or not.
Mm.
And how costly it's going to be in terms of applying that type of therapy in the marketplace, what it's required and how can it be done responsibly and so forth.
Do you think that we in Australia are quite advanced as compared to the rest of the world with using psychedelics? I mean, I'm talking about in a medical setting.
I don't really know. I think I know that in places in Europe it's been used already for a long time in small clinics and stuff. I think in the States there's been a lot of research. I don't know where we see it in comparison to that.
Mm-hmm. Robert Takas, thank you so much for coming on SBS Hebrew.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And that was my conversation there with counselling psychologist Robert Takas. Information expressed in the interview is of general nature and that this information may not be appropriate for your personal circumstances. Contact your doctor for clear advice on your situation.
הפכו את אתר sbs.com.au/hebrew לאתר הבית שלכם. קבלו את הידיעות הטריות ביותר, את הנושאים האקטואליים ביותר, השתתפו במשאלי דעת קהל על אירועים אקטואליים והתקשרו לתוכנית שלנו. sbs.com.au/hebrew
עקבו אחרינו והפיצו אותנו דרך דף הפייסבוק שלנו.